All right. What's going on, Blitz Nation? Welcome to Blindside Blitz. Yes, unfortunately, Jimmy is yet again missing another great show that we have lined up for you guys. Sadly, he's come down with yet another sickness, so he had to duck out for this episode. But really appreciate you guys joining in, and if you could do us a huge favor by doing so, show us your support. Head over to Grumblings Media, the YouTube channel over there. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Make sure you hit the thumbs up while you're there. Don't forget to share it to all your family and friends. And if you want to dig in more and support us more, head over to the grumblingsmedia.com website, where we have a lot of great articles, great other podcasts like ours, whether it be sports, political, entertainment, you name it, it's one-stop shopping. Just head over there. Also, anywhere you get your podcasts. And that's the introductory. Now I need to introduce the man, the myth, the legend that is Big John. Welcome back, Big John.
Hey, Joe, how you doing? And, of course, all three of those things you said about me exist only in my head, so that's important for the people to know. The myths, the legends, all that crap is only inside my head. And, you know, that was a great intro hyping up Grumblings Media, but I also want to throw a little something in there, Joe. We're just short. We're just short of 5,000 subscribers. I know this is a big milestone, Joe. We're climbing. We're a little bit short. We're somewhere around 4,800 right now. Man, we could really use your support. So like Joe said, man, if you like anything you see on this show, if you like anything you see on our buzzer beaters or our political stuff or entertainment stuff, hey, man, do us a solid. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. Just click that subscribe button. Help a couple of brothers out. It's not like we're getting too much fragile, you know what I'm saying, Joe? So so we could use the subscribe button. It doesn't cost you anything. But, hey, man, I'm sorry to hear that the CIA got to Joe and he's under the weather, but to Jim, rather, that he's under the weather. You never know what those CIA guys are up to, but I'll be happy to try to fill his shoes right now. It'll be a tough job, but I'll try to fill it.
I think you'll be able to pull through. And that brings us to one of our topics. What we have today for you guys is we got a lot to go over. We're going to cover a little bit of the review of the championship games. We're going to go through the head coaching fiasco. Guys are moving and shaking. Now we're starting to get some jobs lined up. And what is up with the New Orleans Saints right now? And also, we're going to get into like the replay assist. It was a little bit missing there. So without further ado, let's head into the AFC. NFC championship review here. We'll start off with the Bills and Chiefs, honestly.
Start off with the best.
We're coming in hot in this one. I don't know, John. For me, when I watched that game, it was very different in both halves. For the Bills, Josh Allen seemed to be missing in that game. I'm not really sure where his head was at the time. Like he even looked nervous, anxious, missing throws, and just not executing like he was in the previous games leading up to this one. James Cook, however, was a bright spot for the Bills team.
He balled out.
Yeah, first half.
That defense.
I don't know why they just didn't utilize him more, but they didn't. But in the second half, James Cook exploded. And he only had 13 carries for 85 yards and two TDs. What the production was there. Why weren't you using this guy from kickoff to the end of the game is beyond me.
Yeah, and you know, I think what you're saying is true. Now, I may not be as harsh on or as tough on Josh Allen as you were, brother, but I will say one thing. It was a tale of two halves, no doubt about it. And what you saw was, I think, that the Bills almost were listening way too much to Tony Romo during the week, I think. Because you know how Romo during the game cast, if you caught it on, I think it was CBS, you just kept hearing like, hey, you can't let Josh try to save you on third and seven all the time, third and ten all the time. You got to get him. He's got to be the first one with the ball in his hands. He's got to be the last one with the ball in his hands. Every series, every set of downs, he's got to be the playmaker on two of those downs at least. And I think I'm half joking that they were listening to Romo, but it seems like they were really trying to follow that. And it also seems that Spagnuolo knew that, right? So, how many times did they go for that third and short, fourth and short, and it was the same play, like the half a tush push? Yep. off tackle or between in the A gap, right? It was like, well, hey, it seems to me like he could just as easily either given it to Cook or scoot it around end or an RPO. Why was it? Now, I get it. They're committed to. But, Joe, that's like one of the play calling things that I saw was like that same, like, we're going to get it in there. We're going to get it in there. It's like they were reading their own hype during the week. And that disappointed me because in the first half, let's face it. First of all, can we step back a second? We're both New Yorkers. Let's step back a little bit here. It was a great game. Like everyone predicted, right? It was a great game, entertaining game. But let's face it, the Bills should have won that game. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind that was their game to lose, and they lost it. And I don't know if it was the – so help me out with this. How is it that the Chiefs were still in that game? I had the sense of Bills dominance. Didn't you? Like, despite what we're saying, I had the sense that the Bills were in control of that game, at least up until halftime. Right, Joe? Do you agree?
Yeah. I wouldn't say in the first half. I feel like they gained control in the second half more than the first half.
You mean the Chiefs or the Bills?
The Bills. They started to come together because then they brought the game right back close. Like they were right within like a points. They even got a slight lead in the second half. For me, like the Bills deserved to win that game. However, there was a lot of controversial calls. That kind of almost kind of navigated that the end result of that game. There was a couple of calls, like you think about the fourth down call where they went with Josh Allen. You couldn't really make much of where the ball was spotted, but when you watched the replay from a side view, you saw his helmet, you saw where the ball was kind of being tucked, and then even I think it was Troy Aikman calling the game. Who was calling the game?
I think it was the CBS crew. I think it was
CBS
Romo.
Crew.
Yeah, I think it was Romo and
Romo. That's what it was. Yeah. So Romo on the teleprompter, he drew a line from the free agent, the first down marker, straight
along
down
the sideline
where the line would be, and it's like, oh, dude, the ball's right there. It's right there on the line. It's a first down. And they still called it short. They didn't give it to them. They turned it over on downs, gave it to the Chiefs.
Are we going to get into the refereeing right now, Joe? Because I'm chomping at the bit. I don't know where you want to take it, but I'll tell you why that call was infuriating.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
If you looked at the overhead shot, like you said, right along the line of scrimmage, the first down marker.
Yep.
The guy who had the best shot at it was the side judge on the far end of the field, meaning the far hash mark side of the field, which ended up being the Bills sideline.
Right.
The near sideline, because of the way the scrum had turned, that guy could not see the ball. How do we know he couldn't see the ball? Because the camera was like perched right at his ear. Like, so when you had the camera from that sideline, all you saw was a scrum. Like you said, you could see it, Josh's helmet, you couldn't see the ball. So I get it. That side judge had no view of the ball. So answer me this. Why did he get to overrule the side judge who had – now, if you noticed it, he marked the ball first down territory. So where the side judge who had the clearest look at it gave him a first down. The
he
guy who
here.
Happened – yeah, it was like this –
The other guy was, just shy of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And – you know,
now, is it a coincidence that the guy who marked it short was the guy that had Andy Reid and Spagnuolo buzzing in his ear the whole time? Mm-hmm. Now, listen, I understand. We could get carried away. Like, once you get on the hype train of the refs are paid off for the Chiefs, once you get into the script says the Chiefs have to win, right? Once you get into the world of conspiracy theories, everything seems like proof, right? You could see it with tainted eyes. But that one's hard to explain. It's hard to explain to me how the one side judge had it marked first down, the second one didn't, the one with the worst. Like, did they get together and say, listen, man, I didn't see crap, so let's go with my call. Like, I can only imagine. And then to have it on review and still – see, I'm almost more lenient with the review guys, Joe, because they have to show clear proof. to overturn it. Now, I still think we could see it on the replay.
You can.
Yep. But I could almost give it to him and say, okay, it wasn't conclusive. I could see how they can weasel out of that. True. But did you feel that the Bills – it sounds like you feel the Bills got jobbed on that. First of all, the play call was horrible. Can we get that out of the way?
Yes.
The play call itself was horrible. Like you said, you got a running back that scored 17 times for you during the season up until that point who's picking up, like, what, 6.5 yards a carry throughout the game?
Yeah, like he was averaging close to 5 yards a carry. He was the hot hand of the offense. Six and a half yards.
Yeah, 6.5. He was 13 for 85. That's closer to 7, right? So, and you're not going to give him the ball to get 6 inches when you know the Chiefs are there. Wait, see, I would have even said if you did a half rollout with a pitch, I would have liked that call better than what I saw. Not because I don't trust Josh Allen. But you know the Chiefs said anyone but Josh Allen. We'll let anyone on that team beat us except for Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. So why that call baffles me. I don't understand that call.
Yeah, that was the game plan for the Chiefs, obviously. It was pretty clear what they were going to do, attack Josh Allen. Let's not allow him to beat us.
With
his legs, with his arm. Like, they created an immense amount of pressure on Josh Allen. The offensive line up front just couldn't handle it. They were missing blocks left and right, and it just allowed Josh Allen not to be poised, not to be comfortable in the pocket, had to be flushed out, had to throw the ball away. Even when he tried to make a play, he was overthrowing guys a little bit. So it really affected Josh Allen. The Chiefs defense did an admirable job and executed to a T their game plan. For the Bills with Josh Allen, too, and I think we're kind of getting a little crazy with everything right now. I think going back to the game, there was several opportunities to get a lead, hold on to the lead, and sustain a larger lead for the Bills. They just simply didn't execute. And when you look at the receiving weapons, like, this offense is usually pretty creative with Josh Allen. When you look at the receivers, their top receiving threat was Mac Hollins.
Yeah.
It wasn't Amari Cooper. It wasn't Khalil Shakir. The names that we've heard all season long.
Keon Coleman was not a factor. Yeah.
Yeah. He had 3 catches for 73 yards and a touchdown. He had the big plays as a receiver. Khalil Shakir, he had 6 catches for 46 yards. I expected him to be even more involved. I didn't see it. Cooper, of all people, a guy who just arrived this season via trade. I thought, anyway, going into that game, oh, they're going to feed the rock to Cooper. They're going to get him a lot more involved. No, 4 catches, 33 yards, that's it. No touchdowns, no playmaking ability in that game for the receivers pretty much, except for Mac. James Cook is the second-rated receiver on this team in that game, 3 catches, 49 yards. It's crazy. A guy like James Cook, who had the hottest hand, how are you not feeding him the ball and letting him rock and riding his coattails to possibly victory? That is just crazy.
I agree with you, but let me ask you this. The Chiefs, like you said, very obviously, it was anybody but Josh Allen defense. We got that. Mm-hmm. They were successful turning up the pressure. You're absolutely right. But that, unless you're the 85 Bears, that comes with a price. That type of defense comes with a price.
It does.
We saw a little bit of that exploited by Cook, right, with the solid running. But again, only 13 carries. In a close game, I would have expected that game script to be giving them the ball more often. In a game that ended up being decided by a field goal, why doesn't someone who's playing like Cook have the ball more often in his hands to keep the ball away from Mahomes, right? That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. Like, just, you know, work on the clock, you know, get your points in there. But also, how much of this do you put on Joe Brady? How much of this do you put on the offensive coordinator of the Bills to say, like, okay, all they're doing, blitz zeros, or we're getting a strong side overload blitz, or we're getting stunts up the middle. Like, everything was just created there to put pressure on Josh Allen.
Right.
Hey, man, how about a screen or two? You've got Dalton Kincaid. You could run a tight end screen with him. You could do a quick button hook to him, and he could maybe break one. James Cook. Invite Olay, the defensive lineman, in, and then get it to – I mean, there's ways to counter that type of pressure.
Yeah, where was the creativity?
Joe Brady,
the offensive coordinator of the Bills, I was waiting to see some new wrinkles, something different in that game, because you're playing the Chiefs now. This is a Chiefs team that has now beat you four straight times in the playoffs, and you can't seem to get past them. Oh, mind you, this is your moment. Like, this is your moment. A lot of people had confidence in the Bills to possibly knock off the Chiefs in this game. And Joe Brady, for a guy who is highly touted as an offensive genius in the NFL, a guy that some teams were inquiring on being a head coach. What the hell happened in that game, Joe? Like, where was the creativity? Where were the play action plays? Where were some of the gimmick plays that the Chiefs love to do against you? Like, just something different. Instead of Josh Allen having the ball, Josh Allen running a yard ahead to try to get a first down and getting stuffed. And it seemed like they kept going back to that way too much.
Right.
And not deviating from it, to your point, to get James Cook involved in those short yardage plays. Maybe you have Josh Allen take the ball in the shotgun formation, fake like he's going to run towards the line, then pitch it out to James Cook and let him run outside. Like, stuff like that would have been fun to see, and I feel like it would have been more beneficial to them offensively. But Joe Brady's in question. I even question Sean McDermott at this point. Sean McDermott, I'm sorry. This guy's been there. He's been to the playoffs. He has tons of experience now. You have to know what to expect when you're also going up against, opponents that you've already gone against. You have game tape on them. You've played them before. And for some of his coaching decisions in that game, going for two earlier in the game in the first half of that game.
Twice.
Right? Yeah, twice. But going for two once, right, when you didn't need to. You didn't need to go for two. Take the extra point because you don't know what's going to happen in the second half of the game.
Right.
Instead, he goes for two, fails. The next time they get down there, goes for two again because he missed the opportunity last time. He's trying to make up for it. Still goes for two, fails again. You come away with no extra points. And then if you were to kick those two extra points, you would have been leading by a field goal. It's like, to me, as much as I have been a supporter of Sean McDermott, this game showed me something different in him. I don't know if his decision-making now going forward is going to be questioned because there's a lot of Bills fans out there. There's a lot of media out there all wondering, what's the future of Sean McDermott? How long is his leash now at this point?
Yeah, and it's hilarious because as you were saying that, we have a comment. I'll pop it up. William says, how many chances is Sean McDermott going to get? As a defensive-minded head coach, his team has not been able to stop the Chiefs, not just this game, but for what, four times in a row? Maybe they need a new head coach. And William, the timing of it was perfect with what you were saying because he wrote it independent of before you sort of got that out there. But you're right, Joe. Like, at this point, you can manage to beat the Chiefs in the regular season, but you can't manage to beat them in the playoffs.
Yeah.
The Bills are not a rookie team anymore. So they've got veterans on that team that know what it's like to be in the conference championship. Certainly the quarterback, a lot of the defense. Even James Cook now has been a conference championship or two. So a lot of key veterans on that team should know and should be there. So the players can't say they got overwhelmed. Like the Commanders this year, right? Fabulous run. We'll talk about their game. But they get into the championship game, and it's clear they're overwhelmed. They were outmatched, and then they just fell apart. The Bills should not be doing that. So how much of this do you think is the coaching staff? And let's give it to both of them.
Yeah.
To all three of them. McDermott, Brady, and whoever the DC is right now, I can't remember his name. But the point is, like, it seems to me, like, in critical situations, all three failed as play callers to some extent. And when you add it all up together, you can't win a game. You just can't win a big-time game against Mahomes because we saw it, right? Even when they needed that stop under 2 minutes, they couldn't get the stop. It was too easy for the Chiefs.
Yeah. And the other thing that I'll say, too, is the defense was one of their strengths coming into this game. Like, late in the season, they started to kind of get on the same page. You started to really kind of wake up on that side of the ball. And this matchup derailed all that. The DNs that were starting to play better were crashing in and allowing Patrick Mahomes, allowing Kareem Hunt, allowing anybody, Isaiah Pacheco, to get to the outside and have some big gains.
Well, Worthy, that injury to Benford, right?
Yeah.
Early on, like, the game plan changed for the Chiefs because now Worthy could get 7 yards anytime he wanted. Because did you see how far off Elam was playing? Good 10 yards off. Now, I get it. Worthy, 4-2 speed, I get it. But I mean, goddamn, man, move somebody up, roll somebody in coverage, put some hands on him. He's not a big receiver. Jam him at the line. Do something. Roll a safety over the top. Have the corner press him. Do something. Like, you can't just sit 10 yards back with Mahomes there and say, that's second and three now, the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. And you saw Worthy eat a lot of them up. And before I talk about the next big thing, let's get this. We have a comment. Derpy Entertainment on YouTube says, let's be real. The Chiefs are the new Patriots, protected by the NFL, and nobody wants to admit it because they don't want to lose their job. Well, Derpy, yeah, you're right. We just touched on that. And again, we said we want to caution ourselves against conspiracy theories, Joe. But we were talking about Xavier Worthy. We're talking about Elam. We're talking about the NFL favoring them. Explain to me how that was a catch that got the Chiefs down to the 5-yard line. So the way what catch I'm talking about, right? Derpy, thanks for that comment, brother. Thanks. Keep watching the show. Let a friend know. Subscribe if you haven't already. But the way I saw it, Joe, either that was an incomplete pass or maybe an interception. The last call that would have popped into my head was a completion for Worthy.
Yeah. So in that play where I forgot who, I think he's a rookie for the Bills who went up for that ball. I think he played safety or something like that. He's one of the defensive backs. He went up for the ball to contest it. Initially, what was an interception. He's the one that was like going to catch the ball, but the difference was with Worthy's reaching his hands in there, trying to grasp at the ball at the same time. It became loose when they went to hit the ground. The ball touched the ground. However, both players had possession of it. It wasn't loose anymore at that point. So as they were falling, the ball was loose. Right before they hit, you see both their hands wrapped around it. When the ball touches the ground, it doesn't move at all. And then when Worthy kind of rolls onto his back, and now the ball's on his chest, he's holding onto it tight. The other guy's still trying to dig in there and rip it out. It ends up being called a catch, and obviously all ties go to the offense. So here's the kicker, though. If that player for the Bills goes down with it, because you know the rules as a player, he didn't have very good handle on it even when he was on his back. He could have ripped that thing out and it would have been incomplete. But instead, he kept trying to fight, and then Worthy held on for life, obviously. And ball didn't go nowhere. They awarded the catch to go to Xavier Worthy. And it's just one of those plays, man. Like, it's hard. It's very easy to talk about it and say, well, you should have done this, you should have done that. But in the moment, man, you definitely don't want the Chiefs to have a chance to have that reception there. You got to do whatever it takes to.
Right. I don't blame the DB, to be honest with you. I don't blame the DB, but I disagree with you in thinking that the ground did not aid in that catch. I agree with you. There was four hands on that ball when they hit the ground. I got you there.
Yeah.
But when you see how the ball landed, it wasn't moving, but it compressed against the ground.
Yep.
Right? Which means that the ground was holding the ball up. Now, that definitionally is the ground aiding in the catch. So the ball did not get knocked loose because of the ground. I think the ball was secured because of the ground.
Yeah, I don't think so, because that ball was secured before it hits the ground. The ground no longer aids the catch because they had possession of it. Like, there was no movement in that ball. So when it goes down, it's already been caught and it touches the ground. That doesn't, like, to me, like, that's a catch because they held on to it. Unless it moved when it touched the ground, then I could say, okay, yeah, it definitely aided the catch and it should have been incomplete. But I don't know. I saw it being caught right before, and it was definitely possessed before that ball even touches the field of play. Right. So for me, I think the right call was made. And unfortunately for the Bills, it's just one of those things that didn't go their way. One of many things.
Derpy chimes in again. He says it definitely was interception, but the NFL wasn't going to allow it because the Bills beat them in the regular season, and this recent rematch was inevitable and pretty pathetic, predictable outcome. Wow, Derpy must be a Bills fan there, Joe. He might be one of you guys. So Derp over there thinks it was definitely an interception. See,
it was until they went to the ground. Here's the thing. Rule is, you can look it up in the NFL rule book.
Yep.
If there's a tie between defender and receiver, right, and they both have their hands on the ball,
They give it to the receiver. There's no doubt.
So, yes, initially you're right, Derpy. It was an interception in the very beginning of the catch. But then when they went to the ground and the receiver had his hands wrapped around that ball, unfortunately, it goes right to the offense automatically.
Yeah. So, Joe, just to sort of wrap up a little bit on the AFC championship game so we can move on to your thoughts on the NFC one, how much credit are you giving the Chiefs in this game? Like, we've been talking about a Bills failure. We've been talking about conspiracies on the refs. By the way, we didn't even touch on the Travis Kelce gets in the face of a Bills defender. Yeah, but the Bills guy gets the taunting, right? So we don't even want to get into that. But I think Derpy might chime in that he agrees with us that was a crap call in favor of the Chiefs. But,
oh my God!
But put that aside. How much credit, though? How much affirmative love do we give the Chiefs for this game?
I give the Chiefs defense all the credit in the world because they are one of the best defenses and they seem to rise to the occasion. That's really the reason why the Chiefs have won games. Mm. And, yes, they've been helped by referees. They really have. Like, it's not even, like, second-guessing. The evidence is all there. Throughout the whole regular season, even in the playoffs, we've seen referees call plays a certain way to help the Chiefs, and then we've seen them call plays against their opponents to kind of hold them off. So, I don't give the Chiefs offense much credit. I don't think. I really don't. I don't think they're a good enough offense to – they shouldn't have won this game, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, there was times and moments throughout that game where, the Bills were 3-and-out. The Chiefs went 3-and-out. You know, the Bills really held up their end on that. And then there was some calls, man, that kind of sustained drives, and we've seen this happen time and time again with the Chiefs where they call it one way for the Chiefs, and then when it's
another way
on the other foot for the Bills –
By the way, the more I think about it, the more there were calls. 4th-and-1 for the Bills. There's a famous Skycam shot. 4 Chiefs players were in the neutral zone. Like, clearly, their helmets were past the ball. No calls. Anyway, very quick. Let's bring on Slick Willie Del Pilar. He said, bring me on, guys. I got to speak my piece.
Guys, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
So I just wanted to give you guys a boost for people who think you guys are talking conspiracy theories. Y'all are not alone. Gene Steratore, CBS rules analyst, felt it was a first down. Dan Orlovsky, as we know, a backup guy more known for stepping out of bounds from the end zone, but a well-known ESPN analyst. An awful call, and again, a worse review. Matt Leinart, one of USC's greatest QBs. Well, I guess in some people's minds, you know, awful call. Ari Wasserman, podcaster for The Athletic. I'm no ref conspiracy theorist, but the Chiefs ever not get the call they need? Obviously, Tony Romo. That's a first down. I don't know how they didn't see that. And then we all know Bill Simmons, a self-made entrepreneur on The Ringer, Pat McAfee, even Shannon Sharp. These are serious names. People who have been analysts for a good chunk of their lives. People who have played the game. Rich, even Rich Eisen, who I actually worked with very briefly. Chris Sims, you know, Nepo guy over at NBC. And J.J. Watt didn't comment on this game per se, but he has spoken about the Chiefs. It's not just this game, but it feels like big calls always go their way lately. So this isn't a conspiracy theorist. When players are seeing it, and these comments aren't just one game, but they're over a season, it's doing one thing. They want the next Tom Brady, and they see that. And Patrick Mahomes could be the next Tom Brady without their help, but they're just tanking Patrick Mahomes' legacy. And as far as the calls, Joe, you are absolutely correct. The biggest one I thought this year was the Chiefs versus Raiders when it went from a false start penalty they called and they changed it to an illegal shift. And what did that mean? It was a false start. The fumble would not have been a fumble. The Raiders would have lined up, likely kicked and won the game. Instead, it became an illegal shift. The fumble resulted in the Chiefs getting the ball. The roughing the passer call against the Texans. Obviously, the YouTube have talked about it, the catch or no catch, and the fourth and one ruling. They've had issues against the Bengals that have not gone their way. And it's not just the refs helping the players out. Let's not forget the no call on the timeout when the Chiefs assistant coach, Steve Spagnuolo, who has been magnificent the past 2 years, he deserves an interview for head coach. But he called a timeout. That's a penalty. They didn't call the penalty. So it's clear as day. And I did not play in this game. I covered this game, not just at a fantasy level, but the NFL level. I knew coaches. I knew assistant coaches. I knew scouts. And there is a clear bias for the Chiefs. So I just wanted to let your audience know, hey, we do our research here at Grumsey's Media, baby. And there's the data. Well, there's not really data, but there's some heavyweights who are saying what we're saying too. And with that, fellas, thank you for the time, and I am out.
All right, thanks, William. Bro. Thanks a appreciate lot for that, buddy. Yeah. So you got it there. It's not just us. But I will
it's tell everybody.
You, I'll tell you one thing, Joe. One thing I am happy about.
Yeah.
I counted on the Chiefs winning this game, even though I was pulling for the Bills.
Yeah.
I dropped a couple of honeys. I put them down on the Chiefs. So I got to say, I'm consoled at least that I made some pocket money taking the Chiefs money line on this one, which worked out. Okay.
It definitely did.
Let's move on now to the NFC Championship game.
Yes, sir.
And I think, Joe, not to anybody's surprise, the Eagles won the game. I think anyone – that knows anything kind of said it's been magical for the Commanders, but let's face it, they just don't have the horses to compete with the Eagles. But the blowout was a little surprising, was it not?
Here's what I'll say. I think the blowout, yes, the blowout was probably surprising to the degree that it went to. 55 points is absurd. Shouldn't happen.
Right. I agree.
But I could see the Washington Commanders. I could envision them maybe getting beat, you know, by like mid-30s or something like that. But this, it took on a whole other level of scoring. And it really is attributed to, we talked about this, you know, last week, about the Washington Commanders defense being the weakness of this team. We thought that they would have to play the perfect game on that side of the ball to give them a chance. We already knew Washington with Jaden Daniels and in his rookie year playing
amazing,
playing so amazingly. The offense was going to be fine. It's the defense that they were worried about, and it shows you in this game that in the very beginning, it was kind of hit. They were kind of like throwing little jabs, trying to feel each other out, and then. Right. Next thing you know, comes a hook right across the face, and Saquon Barkley hits him real quick with a long run for a touchdown. That kind of got the ball rolling for the Eagles. And we already knew this. We knew that Saquon Barkley was going to be the key guy to open this thing up, and then they just never looked back. They never slowed down, never stopped. 55-23, insane score for a playoff game, especially a championship game.
You would figure that they wouldn't have time to score that many points because while the Commanders' defense was not up to the task, let's be honest, they were mm-hmm. too slow. They couldn't stop the run. They couldn't stop the pass. They couldn't stop Hurts. There was it reminds me of the year that three years ago when the Giants sneaked into the playoffs and beat the Vikings, and then when they ran up against Philadelphia, it was a bloodbath. And I think we saw the same thing, right? The Commanders mm-hmm. were good enough to outscore a finesse type team like the Lions, who also had injuries on defense, right? But right. when they came down to getting hit in the mouth, mm-hmm. they could not hit back. You know, if it was trading touchdown for touchdown, they had a shot. But if it's like, hey, we're going to take the ball from you on defense, and then you can't stop Saquon. You can't yeah. stop Jalen Hurts in the red zone. Mm-hmm. It was obvious. It was exposed, right? So,
yeah.
And the fact that they couldn't get their own running game going to try to slow down the pace of the game, I think was just the recipe for disaster. I mean, hey, man.
Absolutely. When you look at Brian Johnson Jr. Yeah. had 11 carries for 36 yards. That's an average of 3.3 yards a carry. And yeah. they kind of went away from it because it just wasn't working. They couldn't get the running game going. They had to rely too much on Jaden Daniels. Jaden right. Daniels, the quarterback. Jaden Daniels, the playmaker with his legs. Like
right. Jaden Daniels, the like wizard is what it came down to, right? But, I mean, look, the truth of the matter is, Joe, and you know it as much as I do, Daniels getting them as far as they did, as he did, is awesome. Mm-hmm. In that game, he needed to be protected. He needed the game to be within 10 points heading into the fourth quarter. That's the only shot they had, right? And to me, even though the score doesn't reflect it because it got way out of hand, to me, the turning point was that fumble by Eckler on that little wheel route. I think it was in the third quarter.
Yep.
The Commanders were down by 10, I think, 10 or 11. Eckler caught that. It was like a 7-yard wheel. It wasn't anything spectacular. But the ball got punched out.
Yep.
The Eagles took it. Scored right away, so they turned that turnover into seven. That's when the game got away from them, because now they're three scores down. Three scores down, and you have no running game for them to be afraid of. So they're defensively, they're just getting after it, right? They've got a spy on Daniels. Everybody else is pinning their ears back. Boom, boom. We're just not afraid of you, right?
Right.
Once we're up by three scores in the third, it's over. So to me, that was the key play of the game. I know some people will say, Big John, you're nuts. They were already down by 10, 11 points. How's that the key play? That was the key play in the game. You could just feel all the air, all the resistance right. just came out of the Commanders, man.
The momentum just shifted totally to the Philly sideline. They just built off of that after that. And Washington just didn't have any answers to come back with. And we mentioned the defense, how poorly they played. And as soon as they got those three scores up on them, it was game, set, match. It was over. Like, and you could even see some of the faces on the sideline for Washington when the camera panned to them. You could see that they were devastated already in that game when that happened. It was just like, nothing's working out for us. How are we going to come back from this? And it was it. That was it. It's been written. It's done. And now we're moving on, right?
But can we give props to the Eagles? I mean, they handled their business, man. And I'll be honest with you, even if they were going up against the Lions on the road, mm-hmm. I think you're looking at a similar outcome, especially the way the Lions were banged up, right? Saquon, and it pains me as a Giants fan.
Of course.
To have to cheer for Saquon. But let me tell you this. Saquon was always one of my favorite players coming out of college. I loved him at Penn State. Mm-hmm. The summer before he got drafted, I remember sitting in a bar with my friend saying, like, hey, guys, I know this is crazy, but if we get Saquon, I would take Saquon over a quarterback. I love this kid. He's awesome. But how, and then you go back to that Hard Knocks where Mara saying, just please don't tell me he's going to Philadelphia. And please don't tell me, like, because he's the most popular guy we got. And I saw the other one where Shane's kid is saying, like, draft Jaden Daniels. Trade up to draft Jaden Daniels. You know, he's going to be the best quarterback. Don't worry about – so at times – and listen, it's all comical, of course, but it makes you wonder sometimes, like, really? Are you, is being a GM just as good as having a teenager tell you who to draft? Like a teenager playing fantasy football, are they just as good? Like, was it Mara the only one in that organization that figured out that Jones was worthless and Saquon was the guy you needed to sign? Mm-hmm. Like, where – so, but that aside, to see Saquon, my heart is so happy for him to get what he deserves as a player, to have a chance with a decent offensive line ahead of him, with weapons around him. So even though he is carrying the burden, he doesn't have to carry the burden.
Correct.
And you see the difference in the way he plays, Joe, right? It's like, man, he's confident. I don't know if you remember much about his time with the Giants, if you saw him play, but I do, brother. And, like, he was always great with the Giants, but now that he knows he's got some blockers ahead of him, that cut, when he puts his foot in the ground now and uses those big quads and he's just, like, going from 0 to 60 in 2 yards, you know what I mean? How many times have you seen him burst through that off-tackle run? Where he's just like splitting the guard and the tackle, he's gone. There's no safety that's stopping him, right?
No.
And I'm so happy for him. I'm happy to see that even though they were under you, like, it, you never know which one's going to be utilized. Brown and Smith, the receivers for the Eagles.
Right.
What a great duo. And as long as they don't complain about getting the ball, they're deadly. It's when they start complaining, like, I'm not seeing enough targets, right?
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, if you manage to stop those three, you still got Hurts that inside the 10, is there, even including Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes or even Jaden Daniels, who do you want inside the 10 more than Hurts under center?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially with the way that they execute, you know, I like to call it the brotherly shove.
The brotherly shove, not the tush push.
And then instead of the push, you know, I'm sorry, it should be called the brotherly shove.
Yeah, that's that's a little poofy for you. I get you, but brotherly shove it is.
But they execute it better than anybody. You know, so much so that there's a lot of people that are aggravated. They complain. They want to oust it out of the NFL,
right?
Because of how successful they are at it, and no one else can duplicate it. So when when Jalen Hurts is there, it's 4th and 1. They need a yard. They're gonna get the yard.
Wait till they start running a fake out of that formation. They haven't done that yet. They start running a fake out of that. Like, just when everybody figures out how to catch up to them, then they run a fake out of that?
But that's the thing right there, Big John, is maybe they were saving that all along for the Super Bowl.
Maybe.
Maybe now that everyone sees, they're going to do the brotherly shove. They're going to do it again. Then next thing you know, Saquon's way out there.
Yeah,
and he's running out, and they pitch it out to him, and everybody's funneled inside. Oh, he's gone. You're not catching him. So it'll be cool to see.
Or the old jump pass, right? You run up to the line, jump.
Yep.
The old who was it? Nagoda that did that once for the Chiefs, or was it? I forget, nose guard.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It was one of those Samoan nose guards. I can't remember his name.
But we've seen that before. We've seen Derrick Henry do it. With the Tennessee Titans.
Yes. He has done it as well. Yeah.
So that play's been there. It's definitely an exciting play. It's unique. I would say the guy to watch out for too is we talking about all these big names the Eagles have. But Dallas Goedert.
Oh yeah.
Goedert is kind of like the guy that everybody kind of forgets about until it's time to like, we got to do something about him. So
this Eagles
team is definitely well equipped. They are ready. I feel like they're more ready this time around than they were the last time that they had to face the Chiefs a couple years ago. So do we say that how much are the refs going to be a factor in that Super Bowl? We'll have to wait and see. But I will say this. If that is a clean game, I really have a lot of confidence that the Eagles can do it all. I really do against the Chiefs.
I tend to agree with you.
Yes. So I mean, for both of these games, they were both, I would say, the Bills and Chiefs game lived up to expectation in terms of the scoring, the plays that were made. Yes, there's always going to be the discrepancies and in some poor calls and stuff like that. But overall, that game was one of the best playoff games to watch, if not the best this year. And then as far as the Eagles-Washington game goes, a lot of people knew how it was going to go. I know there was a lot of hopefuls that Washington could pull it out, but they're just not ready. And for them to make it to that stage already, that's got to show you something. They finished building that defense. This team is going to be good for a long time. So we'll have to see what moves they make in the offseason. But right now, it is the Eagles and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
And next week we'll do a more in-depth analysis preview on the Super Bowl. So don't think we're not doing that this week, folks. We're just saving it a little bit closer to the big game. So we'll get right to that. And listen, I actually started getting back into sports betting this weekend. I'm too busy to pay attention during the season, Joe. You know, like we just got so much going on here at Grumblings Media. I don't get a chance to do what I used to do in my old days. But, when it gets down to the conference champions and Super Bowl, that's when I put some money down. So I got to say, I had a lot of good mojo this weekend. I had the parlay. I had both the Eagles and the Chiefs. So I got them on that parlay. I had the over in the Commanders-Eagles. So that hit for me. Then I also hit the both teams over 19.5 in Philly-Washington. That got me a nice payout. And, you know, I was one prop short on hitting a five-leg parlay, and it was the one that you would have thought I would have guaranteed. If Mr. Taylor Swift had gotten into the end zone just once, I would have had myself like a very, very high payout.
Big return.
But he disappeared on me. I was like, when is Travis Kelce the all-time leader in postseason touchdowns, or tied with Jerry Rice or whatever? And it's like all he has to do is get in the end zone once in his game, and I hit a nice parlay. But can't complain too much. I did do well for myself this weekend, so I gotta. And maybe I'll have my Super Bowl pick next week when we do the show, and maybe some props. So if Jim's still out, I will be on and I will make a fool out of myself. But I was gonna say, just for the sake of brevity, we've talked about the games. We talked about like some of the lousy officiating and things like that. Mm-hmm. But this time of year, there's another big topic. So right now, I want you to kick me off. You, sir, because I've been talking too much. Talk to me about this coaching carousel that we're all on right now.
Man, I'll
tell you. Tell me some of these names, man. What's been happening? What's shaking? Catch me up.
There's no shortage of news in terms of the coaching hires. New York Jets, they just recently officially hired Aaron Glenn. And I got a chance to see a few of these press conferences, and I got to say, Aaron Glenn is the right man for the job, because not only has he climbed the necessary ladder, became a coordinator, has experience in the league, now he's coming back home to the New York Jets. And he is a delight to listen to, I got to say. He had some strong words for the New York media. That's usually pretty tough on coaches and everything in that city. He basically just called it out and said, "Hey, listen, guys, New York, we're built for this shit." He goes, "I'm coming in here. We're going to make some changes, and we're going to get this thing right." And the fact that the media kept pressing him about Rodgers, and he just simply said, "Hey, listen, you can ask me all day long, but I'm going to give you the same exact answer." So everybody done? All right. So this guy has a good head on his shoulders. He has a vision. He has a direction. He's very in your face. I love the hire for the Jets. I think this is going to work out well for them. And obviously, all those other questions they'll figure out in the offseason. But that's one. That's one domino that fell. Then you got Pete Carroll.
Hold on. Before you move to Pete Carroll, real quick, let me ask you this. Quick question. Mm-hmm. Like you said, prodigal son, he's coming home to New York. Former first-round pick as a corner in 1994, I think, for the Jets. Loved him as a player. But here's a question for you. You had a great defensive-minded coach in Saleh.
Yep.
You got rid of him. Your interim coach was another defensive coach. Jeff now Holden. The guy you hire is another defensive coach.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a New York fan, I'm saying, what was all the turmoil about? Like, if you look at them, is there really an upgrade? And I'm taking this in the entirety. Is there an upgrade going from Saleh to Aaron Glenn?
No. I really don't think that there's an upgrade there. I think it's more like, well, first of all, we don't even know Aaron Glenn. We don't know what he's going to end up becoming as a head coach. Like, we know him as a defensive coordinator, but we already know Saleh has been a successful head coach in a lot of people's eyes. I thought he was pretty successful. I thought he was a good head coach. For him to get axed by Woody Johnson was a shock to me. I couldn't believe it.
I agree.
And what made it even worse is the fact that Woody Johnson himself never had any advice to do it. He didn't ask the GM. He didn't ask anybody about Robert Saleh. Hey, do you think we should move on from him? No, one time he got off his flight, comes back to New York and says, hey, bring Robert Saleh up here. You're fired. What? For what reason? So they had a good coach in Robert Saleh. This is just with Aaron Glenn coming into the fold. He could be the same guy for the Jets.
Right.
He'll still be a good, hopefully he'll be a good head coach for the Jets. If he is, they don't miss out on much. But again, whenever you have these regime changes, you're starting from scratch offensively. You're starting from scratch defensively in terms of schemes and what your playbook's going to look like. And also you got some decisions to make as a football team. So I don't think Aaron Glenn is Robert Saleh, but he could be.
Okay. And you said you like the hire for the Jets.
I do like the hire. I think this is the best hire the Jets could have made for this cycle for the coaches because there was no short list of candidates out there. There's a lot of guys that are worthy of a head coaching job this year, but I feel like most of them didn't even want the job. Didn't want to take the interview. Didn't even want to go because of the unstable ownership for Woody Johnson. Everybody knows, like, he just fired Saleh. It's like, what was the real reason? I don't think we're at where we want to be. So I'm blaming him. Get rid of him. So quick decisions like that scares some candidates away. And I feel like the only one, like Aaron Glenn, I feel like he was the best one for the Jets. And lucky for them, he chose the New York Jets.
That makes sense. I hadn't considered the angle that there's not too many coaches that want to go work for the Jets. Because a thing that popped in my mind is, wouldn't you bring in McCarthy for an interview, an offensive-minded coach?
Right.
Someone who's been successful. And let's face it, that the Dallas media isn't the New York media, but it's a tough football media, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't think that would have been a problem. But,
credit, Big John, you mentioned it in our previous show that Mike McCarthy could be a name that maybe the Jets kind of look into because of the relationship with Davante Adams, the relationship with Aaron Rodgers, obviously. Maybe they could keep those guys there if they brought him in.
Right.
You mentioned that. And was a really good, idea. But I feel like, maybe
wasn't even considered.
Maybe McCarthy didn't even want the job.
See, that's the part that we really don't know about, right? Because other than Ben Johnson, I don't know any coach that flat out said, I have no interest in going to the Jets. Ben Johnson was the only one we found out about that basically said, I'm not even taking their calls. forget them, But, yeah, that's interesting. All right, let's move on. The next coach up on the list I think you wanted to get to is the Raiders. Well, team there, Joe, yeah. Raider yep. Joe. Tell me, how thrilled is Raiders Nation right now that Pete Carroll, officially the oldest coach in the NFL, has now taken the job in Las Vegas?
Yeah, the oldest, youngest dude I've ever seen.
Yes.
73 years old. This guy doesn't even look – he doesn't even act. We'll just say he has so much energy. He has more energy than 40-year-olds out there.
Like, and physically, he looks like he could be 60. No joke. Like, if you told me he was 60, I would believe you. Yeah, just
yeah,
a great
you should. Pete Carroll's an interesting hire for me. Obviously, we already know his age, and that's kind of been the big deal about Pete Carroll.
Right.
But for the Raiders, I think more than anything, they were looking for stability. They were looking for someone to come in that could lead and has been there, done that. Like, no more of these guys that they have, like, we'll give them a shot, see what happens. Pete Carroll gives you that experience. You know, so he's been to a Super Bowl. He's won a Super Bowl. He's had to deal with egos. He just knows how to run a football team, bottom line. So I feel like this is a good hire for them. Now, my major concern, though, is even though they decided on Pete Carroll, okay, fine. How long is this guy going to coach for? Where you get into a point where, like, he has a 3-year contract with a 4th-year option on it. Let's just say 3 years from now, he decides to retire. You started to build something, and now in 3 years, whether they're there or not, now you got to start the process all over again. So I'll be curious to see who he brings in for his coordinators.
I was going to say, how he builds his staff in that case is very important.
Right.
Because it's literally going to be a lineage thing. If they're successful, mm-hmm. and right. he has to retire because of age, which he might not. I mean, Belichick is thinking of coming, is already at UNC, right? And they were thinking of bringing yes. him into Las Vegas because of the Brady connection. So I think that's something you worry about in 3 years, honestly,
right.
especially if he brings in like one of his guys, I use in air quotes, to either be OC or DC or have some sort of assistant coach, head coach role. I'm more curious to find out, Joe, if you think this is almost a Harbaugh-like hire for the Raiders, in the yeah. sense that what's Coach Carroll going to want to do first season? Play tough in the trenches. Have a smash mouth defense, whether it's on the line or in the secondary. He doesn't care. Let's bring some pain. And then a strong running game, which might allow them to bypass having to draft a quarterback in the first round, having to trade up potentially to get Sanders or Ward, right? Because that's a lot of talk in Raiders Nation. Do they trade up to try to get one of these guys if one of them doesn't, if presumably yeah. Shador doesn't fall to them at 6?
No.
So do you,
no,
do you,
no, no.
You're right. So do you see it as like a Harbaugh-like hire where, hey, we're year one, we know we're not making the playoffs, mm-hmm. but we want to set the right level set. Let's build the yeah. trenches. Let's get a good runner. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if they got like an Ashton Jeanty or something like that where they say, like, we found our workhorse. We found our new Josh Jacobs, our new Marshawn Lynch, if you want to go back mm-hmm. to that. Do you feel it's something like that with Carroll, that that's really sort of like – their preferred path to growth in the AFC West?
So the one thing that I'll say, too, is the marriage with the GM and John Spytek, who took the job with the Raiders, and Pete Carroll have a similar vision. They want guys that are high-character guys. They want guys with production, guys that love football, and aren't going to make so-called business decisions when they're on the football field. If you're a corner right. and Derrick Henry's coming at you, are you going to step up and try to take his legs out and make the play? Or are you going to slightly step to the side and let him run right by you, basically, because you're not going to stop him that way?
Give him the old ole, yeah.
Yeah, so they want guys that live, breathe, and die football. And I think going forward, there's going to be some changes roster-wise, of course. And for Pete Carroll, kind of similar to a Jim Harbaugh hire, because, listen, if you pay attention to Pete Carroll when he was in Seattle, what did he have there? He had a great defense. He had a solid offensive line, and he had a great running back. They didn't always have a great quarterback. But they were able to win games by running the football, playing hard-nosed defense, and then just making, you know, passing plays. When it comes to passing, like, they just need to make a play here or there. So it right. sounds like from the press conference for the Raiders, it sounded a lot like that type of talk. We want to be strong in the trenches, like you mentioned, stellar defense, and a running back that can run the ball. So they have some receiving talent already there, and John Spytek did allude to the fact that there's talent on this roster. They're ready to build upon that. And for Pete Carroll coming into the season, that's going to be the focus for them. I'm kind of intrigued with the one team that has the second most cap space this year in free agency, what they attack, who they try to bring in. to kind of speed up the process before the draft gets here to try to get back into the swing of things. Because they did say that they're building now. They're not building for 5 years down the road. They're trying to change it around as fast as possible.
Yeah, and the question is, do you go the route of the Commanders that said, we're all in on our quarterback of the future and it paid off for them? Or are you taking more of like a Vikings approach, you know, where you could pick up a veteran and plug them in. If everything else is solid, you could plug in a veteran. So it'd be interesting to see how they approach that.
Yeah. I think for the Raiders, I think their mistake will be is if they try to force the issue. We all know they need a quarterback. They don't really have an answer, at least officially anyways.
Right.
But if they are going to trade up and give up an enormous amount of compensation just to move up to get a quarterback that may or may not work out, that's usually not the right way to do things.
Right.
You gotta have absolute conviction. And I think in this year's class, I don't think it would be wise to trade up.
Well, the one thing is they've got somebody who knows about quarterback talent in the building, right? So talking about Tom Brady. Yeah. So anyway, okay, who else we got on that carousel?
Well, we have Liam Cohen for the Jaguars now, which was funny. Liam Cohen goes from, hey, I'm taking my name out of the head coaching vacancies and I'm coming back to Tampa, taking my talents back to Tampa. I'm going to be the OC for you, Baker. Let's do it again. To literally a day later, Tampa, yeah, guess what? I think I'm going to take a head coaching job going to Jacksonville. I mean, the guy literally spun on a dime and decided to go to and take that Jacksonville Jaguars job and said that he's going to be working and building around Trevor Lawrence. And that's something that the Jaguars were looking for, is whoever the next head coach is going to be for them. They wanted someone that could come in, help further develop Trevor Lawrence, help build him up and build around him, because they've already gave him that big contract, that big extension. So for the Jaguars, I feel like with an offensive-minded coach like Liam Cohen, we all know Doug Peterson was the former coach, but something just wasn't working out for them. Liam Cohen brings in a new, younger attitude, more creative, especially when you watch Tampa Bay, what they were able to accomplish with their players. He's going to bring all that to Jacksonville, and I feel like this is a very good hire for the Jaguars, who, honestly, when I was looking at the roster, I wasn't sure who they were going to be able to entice to take that job. I didn't even hear about Liam Cohen until late in their search for a head coach. So, for Liam Cohen, I think this is a good decision for him. And for the Jaguars, they finally got someone that is not only just younger, but a guy who is more modern and more creative in his offense.
And let's face it, he has proven success. Not that I think Trevor Lawrence is a reclamation project, but he certainly hasn't lived up to his full potential. I mean, I think when we see that guy play, you're like, oh, man, I could see that. I could see where he was quarterback Jesus coming out of Clemson. I could see it. But why don't I see it every game? You know, it's like, how much of it is injuries? How much of it is his supporting cast? How much of it is the coaching? I mean, who was it? Spurrier destroyed him, right? I mean, Spurrier, right? It was Spurrier, yeah. Spurrier destroyed Trevor Lawrence, basically, right? Was it Spurrier, or am I confusing him with someone else?
No, you're confusing him with someone else. Urban Meyer?
Urban Meyer, that's it, not Spurrier. Urban Meyer, my apologies. I knew it was one of those college coaches that I couldn't stand. But anyway, okay, Urban Meyer basically messed with that kid's head bad, right?
Yeah.
Are we still seeing the remnants of that? I don't know. But to your point, I honestly thought Doug Peterson could turn it around with Trevor Lawrence, because I like Doug Peterson as a head coach. I think
he almost did.
A good coach. Yeah.
His first year, Doug Peterson as the head coach there, it seemed like it turned things right around and Trevor Lawrence started to play better. And, you know, we go into this past season, we get up to this point, and Trevor Lawrence looks very different from the first year he spent with Doug Peterson. And it's also, I don't think Peterson changed. I mean, usually coaches stay the same, you know, when they coach. So I don't know if Trevor Lawrence developed bad habits and they had a hard time getting through them. So, you know, for Trevor Lawrence, next year is going to be a big year for him. He has to prove, and I know he's got a new head coach, but I feel like he has to show a little bit more next season to give Shad Khan, the owner, some hope in him, you know, and the fans, because a lot of disappointment in Jacksonville for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you. Should have been better shape than they are. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. There's a couple of updates for some coaches that are taking interviews right now, one of which is Kellen Moore. We've heard Kellen Moore's name. He is currently the offensive coordinator for the Eagles, but we all know who runs that ship on offense. Former Dallas Cowboys offensive coordinator Kellen Moore did go to interview with Dallas, didn't end up getting a job. Instead, they gave it to Brian Schottenheimer. So that one
came out of the blue, Joe.
Yeah, so for Moore, real quick, for Moore, he's headed to the Saints as an update. He's going to interview for the head coaching job down in New Orleans currently. But, yeah, as you're saying, Brian Schottenheimer was a surprise to some people. I'll say this. I did start to hear murmurings about Brian Schottenheimer's name in Dallas as being a real legit candidate probably 4 days ago. And I was like, well, why would they hire him? Then I started to think about it. Well, you think about that staff Dallas Cowboys still have currently. Mike McCarthy assembled that staff. Now that he's out, a lot of people would say, well, continuity. We talk about that word, continuity. By hiring Brian Schottenheimer, he's going to keep most of that staff intact. All the players know what to do, know what to expect from these coaches, know the plays. There's not going to be any big changes, especially offensively. Right. And that, I think, was a big deal for Jerry Jones on whatever coach he decided. He wanted someone that has either worked with Dak Prescott in the past or someone that is currently working with him. So he has confidence. He knows what to expect next year. And I think this was a hire that kind of just came about really quickly. Do I think it's the right hire? No, because I think the real one was to keep McCarthy, a guy who was already successful with you.
Right.
So that to me is my thing is I don't think it's a bad hire, but I think you should have never fired Mike McCarthy to begin with.
Right, right. Yeah, that makes sense to me. Well, Dallas to me is always a circus when it comes to this sort of thing. You know, half the time I don't know if he's just looking for name recognition. That's why this one, like, not that I ever thought Deion Sanders was ever going to coach the Cowboys at this stage. I think all of us said that's just PR at this point, right?
Right.
But I am a little surprised that it ended up being Schottenheimer, just because I would have never thought that would have been the name that Jerry would have wanted to.
Big name, like flash,
splash.
Everybody kind of thought it was going to be Deion Sanders.
Yeah, we all thought Well, he floated that name around. I don't think anybody who understands the NFL would have said Deion's going to Dallas. I honestly never expected that to actually happen. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like, hey, Robert Saleh is another one who could have come in there. Like you said, he's a good coach. Why not see if you could get him in there? You know, there were some other names they could have tried to float in there as well. But, yeah, so we'll see what happens. But certainly took me by surprise a little bit.
Fine. Then we have McCarthy. We brought up his name already. Where's he going? He just recently had a head coaching interview with the Saints. And what was interesting is what I found out is that apparently the New Orleans Saints came away unimpressed with Mike McCarthy in his interview.
Okay.
Now Mike McCarthy he's still out there, which I'm kind of surprised. I definitely thought he's going to still get a job. I don't know. Maybe he ends up taking one of these offensive coordinator jobs now,
right?
Instead, or he could pull a Mike Vrabel and go work in the front office somewhere. Who knows?
Or take a year off, man. He could take a year off.
Or take
hey, listen,
it off.
We Let's be honest, Joe. I mean, we talked about it before. We thought he should have interviewed for the Jets job. Maybe Aaron Glenn convinces him to come along and be his OC. That could be an Aaron Glenn move, right? I mean, where he says, like, I'll handle the defensive side of the ball and I'll keep these guys interested and motivated. But, hey, we need someone to whisper into whatever ear Rodgers is listening out of this season and, you know, see what we can work over there. Hold on a second. We have a comment. Before you continue, Joe, I don't mean, but I want to make sure get to everybody before we sign off. Hody John says, I'm late to the show tonight, so I'm sure this was covered already, but hot dang, all four coaches in the AFC West all have championships. Broncos aren't going to have it easy in division anytime soon. Hody, of course, is a Broncos fan from out west. But that's an interesting point. We really didn't touch on that. He goes, with the hire of Pete Carroll now, all those coaches have rings. Am I right? Carroll, Harbaugh, who is it?
Andy Reid.
Andy Reid. So, all of those guys now out there. So that's so you can't argue about the competition when it comes to coaching in the AFC West.
The AFC West just got a little tougher. That's what it seems like. But
that's what it sounds like. Yeah,
we do have to wait and see, like, because a lot of these teams that they added like the Raiders, they added Pete Carroll this year, and we'll see it. You know, we'll definitely see in the off season what kind of decisions Pete Carroll makes and the staff there with John Spytek. We'll see what kind of moves they make. Who knows? Maybe they are one of those teams that go all in for Sam Darnold if he's available. You know what I mean? And try to bring him in to be that quarterback for them right now. And we mentioned earlier in the show, like, or Big John, I should say, you mentioned it about how in Pete Carroll's offense, they can get by with a average quarterback, maybe a little bit above average. So we'll wait and see. But the AFC West definitely looks, at least right now, looks like it got a little tougher. But, you know, we'll see how these teams develop.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Joe, is that have we done taking our spin on the coaching carousel?
Just that, we're pretty much down to brass tacks here. I think that concludes what the updates are for the coaches right now. McCarthy, we're still waiting to hear if he takes a different job. If maybe he comes. Maybe even though the reports are that the Saints were unimpressed, maybe that was all kind of smoke. We don't know. But Kellen Moore right now is headed there. So I think if Kellen Moore has a good interview, there's a good chance Moore will be the coach of the Saints because that way it gives them a offensive-minded coach to pair up with Derek Carr and this team that needs to continue building. You know, we the defense, they're getting a little older in some spots. They're one of those teams that a lot of candidates really don't want to take the job, not because they think it's a bad job, but because of what comes with it. The fact that they are they're the most over the cap team this upcoming offseason to where they got to scale it down so far yet again where you might see guys go like Cameron Jordan. You might have to find a way to move on from his contract. And other players, they're not going to be able to retain. So it's not really a rebuilding. You're not really rebuilding the team.
They're hamstrung. They're hamstrung.
Yeah, you definitely have to retool it. A lot of work to be done in New Orleans.
They are definitely hamstrung. And they're hamstrung, it seems like. They seem like they've been hamstrung by the cap for the last 10 years. It just seems that every season, the first thing you hear is, okay, they got to shed a ton of salary again. Yep. You know, and it makes you wonder if they have a good capologist. You know what I mean? Like where?
Oh, yeah, right? Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, and let's end it on this. But one of the great, aside from coaching, aside from the players balling out, aside from the front office making the right trades and everything, the most perhaps undervalued skill is figuring out how to constantly restock the cupboard without putting yourself in this horrible financial situation. And to me, the masters of it, the Eagles and the Chiefs, it's not a coincidence that the last 5-6 years, they're always fighting to get into the Super Bowl. They're always right there in the conference championships because they always find a way to keep getting fresh talent in there, whether it's a rookie, whether it's a veteran that's playing for a minimum. And for them, the cap always works out. You look at the Chiefs, you know, they go out, they get a pass rusher when they need him. They go out, they get like a DeAndre Hopkins, right? Mm-hmm. Look at the Eagles. Seemingly, Zach Braun, they bring him in. What's he, like a backup linebacker with the Saints? Comes into Philly, has an all-pro season, right? That's not luck anymore. You know, when it happens often enough, it's not luck. So you look at Howie Roseman and you say, okay, that guy knows how to build a roster in the modern NFL that's built to last, mm-hmm. that regardless maintain of it. How much he has to pay, maintain it, that cap is always manageable for them. So I think that's part of the game that a lot of fans ignore nowadays. Unless, of course, your team is stuck under dead money, then it's always a problem. Talk to the Giants. Yeah. Talk to the Broncos. Yeah. You know, it's for certain teams, it's a perpetual issue. So to have a good capologist, is awesome.
And for Howie Roseman, the key to that is drafting well.
Yeah.
That's something that this guy has continuously done for Philly, and that's why you look at the roster you're like, man, they what the heck? They got that guy, they got this guy, they got that. Yeah, because they're mostly all from the draft, if not all from the draft. Like the all offensive line was all drafted by the Eagles. The not A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith was drafted by the Eagles. Dallas Goedert was drafted by them. Like then you look on the defense. Their whole D-line's been – everybody
Jalen
has
Carter,
been drafted for the most part.
How many teams passed on Jalen Carter?
Like
he fell to the middle of the draft for them, right?
Yeah, how far – it wasn't that far down because at the time the Eagles had a, want to say, bottom top 10 pick. Like they had
no, it was, I thought it was in the teens. I thought it was
no,
in the
No, they
teens.
Had two. They had two first-round picks.
Oh, they had two first-round picks.
And one was way up. And some people were like, well, maybe they trade up and they get Jalen. They didn't have to. Because so many teams were scared of his background and the issues he had at Georgia in college, and they just kind of like, nah, we're not going to take him, we're not going to take him. They were scared. Howie Roseman already had the infrastructure in place in Philly to where he's like, I can take a chance, I'm going to draft this kid, and if he's everything that people say he is, we got the veteran leadership, we got the locker room that can direct this kid in the right direction. And sure enough, they did. And look at him. Have you ever heard him get in trouble since he's been in the NFL? No. So that right there tells you a lot. The leadership is there.
And he's a game wrecker, too.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's the other part of it, too, is you have to draft well. If you don't, you aren't going to be able to sustain that continue to win and keep cultivating that roster every year. So good teams. They know how to do it, and hopefully with some of these head coaching hires, these new GM hires for some of these teams, that maybe, hopefully, they'll be back on the right track and they can try to start building their teams back up.
That's true, sir. Absolutely true. Well, right. Joe, I'll say one thing. As I'll toss to you to wrap up, but I just want to say it was a great show tonight. I enjoyed talking to you. Best wishes and a shout out to our man Jim McPhee, who has been knocked out once again by the flu. Jim, feel better because I can't do this every Tuesday. You guys talk too much. I can't do this every Tuesday. I yield to your superior abilities. So pleasure, Joe, being here. But why don't you wrap us up and take us home?
Appreciate it. Big John, just want to say thank you so much for joining us for this episode. And well wishes to Jimmy out there. Listen, Nation. The Blitz Nation, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you guys so much for all the support. Over at Grumblings Media, it's been an amazing ride so far. Head over to YouTube. You can help us support us by subscribing. Hit that button. Hit the thumbs up. Drop in the comment section below, too. You know, when we go live, you guys are more than able to drop the comments. You can either ask us a question, give us your opinion. It's all supposed to be interactive here. And don't forget to share it as well. We are so close to 5,000 subscribers, guys. We need your support. We need you to keep it going. So please help us there. If you want to check out more content of Grumblings Media. Head over to the website, grumblingsmedia.com. There you're going to find great articles, other podcasts like ours, whether it be sports, entertainment, political. It's all there. And also, take us on the go with you, and you can follow us anywhere you get your podcasts.
Joe, couldn't have said it better myself, man. All right, everyone, for Joe DiCapita, or he's over there, I guess, on your side.
Yes, I'm there. There you go.
This is Big John. We'll catch you all with Jim McPhee and Joe next week. Peace out, everybody.